Welcome once again, right here on PRN, that's Progressive Radio Network, and it's Gary Knowles Radio. Also, we have so many wonderful shows right here on Progressive Radio Network, and you can always tune in online at prn.fm. And this is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse. You can always find out more about what we're doing at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. And some of the fun things we are doing right now are herbal identification walks and medicine making workshops. And here we actually go outside. We had a very big group right here on Long Island about a week ago, and we'll be repeating that, by the way. Just go to naturalnurse.com calendar and you'll see when we are giving these in your area. And we go outside and actually identify wild plants that you might think are weeds, and we gather them and make them into medicine. All our participants went home with their own cough syrup and a nervine tea, that's a relaxing tea made from wild plants that are growing in the woods, and also a smudge stick. And then we cooked a lot of the herbs in an oil. We used really high-grade grapeseed oil. You can use olive oil, and it extracts out the actives. You mix in a particular amount of beeswax, and we made our own very, very healing skin salves, and everyone went home with one of those. So if that sounds like something you might want to know about, well, check out naturalnurse.com. We also have certification courses where you can get CEU credits if you are a professional, such as a nurse, a midwife, massage therapist, acupuncturist, or dietitian. Or you can get a certification rather than credits if you are not a licensed professional. So either way, those are certified classes that are given online in such topics as herbal medicine, specific therapeutics, leaky gut syndrome. We have many, many coming up in the next few weeks and months. So please join us. And today we have as our guest a wonderful guest who is a holistic pharmacist, which sounds a little bit like an oxymoron, but we'll be telling you why that's not the case. And this is Sherry Torkos. She is a pharmacist, author, certified fitness instructor, and health enthusiast who enjoys sharing her passion with others. She graduated with honors from the Philadelphia College of Pharmacy and Science, and since then has been practicing holistic pharmacy in the Niagara region of Ontario. Her philosophy of practice is to integrate conventional and complementary therapies to optimize health and prevent disease. Sherry has won several National Pharmacy Awards for providing excellence in patient care. As a leading health expert, she has delivered hundreds of lectures to medical professionals as well as the public, and is frequently interviewed on news shows throughout North America and abroad. She has authored 18 books and booklets, including Saving Women's Hearts, the Canadian Encyclopedia of Natural Medicine, and the Glycemic Index Made Simple. Sherry uses her expertise in pharmacology and nutrition to educate people on complementary therapies to optimize health and prevent disease. So thank you so much for joining us today, Sherry Torkos.
Hi there, Ellen. Thanks for having me.
And I want to tell people, and we'll be mentioning several times, that this show will be archived and a direct link to contact you in the future will be there, but I'll tell our listeners about that right now. Best place is to just go to Sherry, S-H-E-R-R-Y, Torkos, T-O-R-K-O-S, .com. And she has all this wonderful information there that we've just mentioned in our introduction. So again, thank you so much for joining us. Let's go back in time, Sherry, because like I said originally, a lot of people actually would first think that putting together holistic and pharmacist in two words, like I'm the natural nurse, and I get questions about that is similarly. So holistic pharmacist, is that an oxymoron, or does that really work for you?
Yeah, I know. I've had actually a few medical doctors that practice integratively say to me, yeah, holistic pharmacy, that does sound like an oxymoron. But when you think about historically where we got our medicines from, they were from plants. They were natural. They were holistic, which I know is something you wholeheartedly embrace. And unfortunately, we got away from using plants when we got into the pharmaceutical revolution. And certainly drugs have their place, and we have, you know, advanced health and medicine a lot with the discovery and use of a lot of medications. But I think it's important not to forget nature's medicines and the plants and the healing properties of plants, and also foods and the benefits that foods can offer us from a therapeutic perspective. And so really my focus as a holistic pharmacist is to integrate and utilize everything at our disposal. So whether I'm counseling patients on their arthritis or depression or menopause or bladder infections or blood sugar, you know, I don't like to just say to them, well, here's a drug, this is going to help, you know, fix your problem, because there's so much more that we can do from a lifestyle perspective and holistically to help people. And so I try to work with my patients to educate them on the benefits of, you know, simple things like dietary changes and exercise and how they can use supplements complementary to maybe the medications that they're taking. And in some cases, I also recommend people try natural measures first, and I never discourage them from taking medication, but there are a lot of cases where a patient can't tolerate a drug, or maybe the first line approach could be dealt with very effectively from a holistic perspective. And so, you know, for the focus of my career, which has been over 20 years practicing pharmacy, this has really been something that I have taken on, and I find it very rewarding, and my patients do as well. And thankfully, along the years, I've won over the minds of a few doctors that I work with.
Yeah, so let's go back in time. And what made you interested in becoming a pharmacist?
Well, when I was in high school, I did an internship program that was at our local hospital, and I had the opportunity to work with a wonderful pharmacist who I found very inspiring, and she had, you know, talked a lot to me early on about, you know, how, yeah, we have all these chemical drugs, but, you know, interestingly, there are a lot of drugs that we have that originated from plants, like digitalis and some of the other drugs that we were using, and I found that very fascinating. How we can take, you know, certain things and they can have these physiological effects on the body. And when I was in high school, I myself started to suffer with a medical condition that wasn't able to be helped by mainstream medicine. And at the time, we didn't know what was wrong, but I was wasting away. I had terrible gastrointestinal problems, emotional symptoms, a wide range of problems began to occur, and after going to many, many doctors and taking a lot of unnecessary drugs, it was finally discovered that I had celiac disease, which is a gluten intolerance. And once I eliminated gluten from my diet and I started taking supplements, I went from just a horrific state of health to a state of optimum health, and it was remarkable. Back in my high school days, I was very fatigued. My hair didn't grow. I was covered in eczema. I just didn't feel well. I had no energy, anemic, and the list goes on. I didn't know at the time, but the things that I was eating, most of the things I was eating contained gluten, which is a protein found in a lot of the grains, like wheat, rye, and barley, and most forms of oats. And the gluten was poisoning my intestines, and as a result of that, I wasn't absorbing any nutrients. So I became severely nutrient deficient. Didn't know at the time, because I was a, you know, teenager, and my parents took me to all these different doctors, and they said, oh, it's Crohn's disease, it's colitis, it's irritable bowel. And then at one point, a doctor said, well, this, we don't know what it is, but, you know, it must all be in her head. and they were kind of dismissing it as just a psychological problem. And it wasn't until I finally saw a gastroenterologist that they determined that I had celiac disease. And this was back in the mid-80s when celiac and gluten, there was very low awareness of these conditions. And I was the first person that I'd ever heard of that had celiac and gluten intolerance. And it was not easy, but I'll tell you, once I got rid of gluten and cut it out of my diet strictly, I began to feel so much better. And over a period of months, I was able to restore my health. And I think that whole experience coupled with my exposure to pharmacy and natural medicine just kind of culminated in bringing me to the point where I really wanted to focus my career in a holistic manner.
That is a great story. Let's differentiate, because you're saying gluten intolerance, and of course that involves many more people than an actual genetic expression of celiac disease.
Right, I have celiac disease. So I have the true form of celiac disease. Gluten intolerance, we call it an intolerance because it's not an allergy. It's more of an autoimmune disease where the body, when I ingest gluten, it elicits an immune reaction which causes destruction of the absorptive surface of the intestine. To be differentiated from, there are a lot of people today that have a condition called non-celiac gluten sensitivity where they don't produce the immune reaction. However, when they eat gluten, they have difficulty digesting it, and it can cause some similar symptoms, bloating, gas, pain, constipation, diarrhea, even skin rash, things like that. But we're finding that, I would say, just over the past few decades, the awareness of gluten intolerance, gluten sensitivity, celiac disease has really expanded. Like I said, in the 80s, it was very rare. They estimated it to be about 1 in 4,000. Now, today, with celiac disease alone, we know that it affects about 1 in 100 individuals. Very common problem, more common than type 1 diabetes.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, but I just like, thank you for differentiating. The thing is, I actually have every single patient who comes to see me with any kind of list of vague symptoms that you just listed, such as digestive difficulties, skin rashes, unexplained fatigue, all those things, I always have them do the following, very often before they even come to see me, which is do a completely off gluten for 1 month period of time. Because when we look at, as you've been describing as a pharmacist, Sherry, the risk-benefit ratio of using various things, where pharmaceuticals can be very, very life-saving and fantastic when used appropriately, but when you look at the risk-benefit ratio using them for something that you were prescribed because you had those vague symptoms, and also often those pharmaceuticals have more of an adverse profile than the symptoms you were experiencing, nor do they tend to control them very well, what is the downside of just trying a wheat-free diet?
Well, the only downside is that if a person has underlying celiac disease and they go on a gluten-free diet, the only way to definitively diagnose them with celiac is to have them go back on gluten in order for their body to produce the antibodies, which can be detected on a blood test. So I always tell people, you know, if I'm talking to them and we suspect there may be some celiac disease, get the blood test before you go on the gluten-free diet, because once you go on the gluten-free diet, if you get a blood test at that point, you could get a false negative because your body may not be producing enough antibodies. And years ago, we used to say, you know, okay, people, if they went off of gluten and they felt better, that they could just go on gluten for a couple of weeks, a small amount, and then get tested. But now there's been some studies that have come from Europe that have said, no, it could take, you know, 2 months or more of being back on gluten before your body will produce adequate antibodies. It's very individual. So, again, when I suspect celiac disease, I say get that blood test. There's a home test kit that you can get through different healthcare practitioners. It's called the BioCard Celiac Test Kit. you can get that, or you can just have the laboratory order your TTG, and sometimes they do the IgA as well, and the endomysial antibodies. Get those tested, and then give up gluten if the thing is, you could get the results. It could say negative. You don't have gluten intolerance, but it still may help you to go off of gluten. I know a lot of friends, family, patients that I've encountered over the years that have tested negative for celiac, but they just don't feel well when they eat gluten. They get the bloated belly, headaches, foggy head. Once they give up gluten, even inflammation, arthritis seems to respond very favorably to a gluten-free diet. But I do think it is important to screen properly with the blood test first, if you can.
Right. That's great information. But, yeah, absolutely what you said I have certainly found to be the case, which is that very often there seems to be this continuum whether or not you actually have that genetic marker present. So that's very good advice. If you do want a definitive diagnosis, do it first. And
yeah.
But even if you are not sensitive in terms of a genetic marker or the antibody response, it doesn't hurt. There is no downside to try gluten-free diet, because it's very astounding to me, and especially you brought in that inflammatory reference, how many people feel better regardless of what is wrong with them with that one easy, completely safe trial intervention.
Yeah, the gluten-free diet is a healthy diet, absolutely, and as long as you're reading your labels carefully, because now today the gluten-free baked goods are better. However, when they first came out years ago, they were just full of a lot of, rice, starch and rice and tapioca, a lot of quick-release carbs. But now you're seeing more multigrain, high-fiber, gluten-free products. So you want to be careful when you are switching over to a gluten-free diet that you're watching your nutrient intake. Sometimes the gluten-free products aren't fortified with the vitamins and minerals as the regular ones are, so I always recommend a multivitamin for most of my patients anyways, just to make sure you're getting enough of your nutritional needs met. And fiber is the big thing, too. On a gluten-free diet, if you're just having, say, rice pasta and corn pasta and rice bread and things like that, you may not be getting enough fiber in your diet, so pay attention to that, and if necessary, consider a fiber supplement.
That is all great advice, and I completely agree with you. I actually tell my patients when they're first trying it, don't even get something that says gluten-free bread. Just forget it. Just leave it alone, because read your labels. As you said, many things, because gluten-free is such a hot and heavy media marketing tool at the moment, which it has become,
mm-hmm.
they kind of slam dunk that label on, anything, and then they put in this paragraph of sugar, starches, potato starches, a lot of GMO product material made out of corn and soy, and it's just junk. But certainly, how about a diet of whole foods? That's what we always talk about, where there's not too many things, or like in my case, in my house, nothing with a paragraph on it, nothing
yes.
in a package, just food.
Keep it simple.
Salad,
I always tell people, keep it simple.
Soup. Exactly, and that's an easy way, and you can use, like you said, organic, let's say, rice cakes that have really no paragraph. On the side it says, organic brown rice, comma, nothing,
Yes.
And there are ways to try it that are inexpensive, and you're not going to get a terrible deficiency of any kind if you do this for a week or so. So certainly taking a multivitamin is a great advice. Now, you studied, of course, pharmacology, but did you study, because a lot of pharmacy schools no longer have, but used to have, pharmacognosy?
Yes, when I was at school, there was one course in pharmacognosy, but I would say, when I was in school, it was the whole natural herbal revolution was just starting. It wasn't really something that was widely embraced. I would say that at the time I graduated and started practicing, with more of a holistic focus. I was the, you know, a very slim minority of people, but, you know, pharmacognosy, for those that aren't familiar, it's really like a branch of pharmacy that deals with medicinal drugs that are obtained from plants. And we, like I said, we had one course on that when I went to school, but I think now, given that it is becoming much more popular and there's a lot more interest, patients, I think the public has driven the growth of programs now that are offered. You see more doctors, more pharmacists, nurses becoming more educated and aware of these natural options because patients are taking them. They're demanding more options and for some guidance as well.
Well, thank you for that. I think it's almost like a little sandwich kind of, because of course in past times and not so far past times, we're talking about even in the 1940s, which is not really so long ago, all doctors took pharmacognosy because all of drug medicine was based on natural product chemistry. And then, like you said, right around the time that you were coming to the forefront with your pharmacy education, it was kind of completely eliminated, just about, like you said, a one course or maybe even an elective. But now I do believe it is becoming more popular. I know a man who just took an entire pharmacognosy PhD at Rutgers University. So it is
becoming
more actively introduced. And in pharmacy school, would you say they are going back to teaching in a positive light of the positive medicinal components, or are they teaching it in terms of being worried about herb-drug interactions, which certainly are a concern?
Yeah, I would say a little bit of both. They're also, you know, the pharmacists that are graduating today that I've talked to, they are getting some education with respect to the possible drug-herbal interactions. I think we went through a period, you know, once people started using more natural products, you know, natural equals safe, and I don't think there was awareness of the possible side effects and interactions, and granted, a lot of these natural products aren't studied to the same extent as the drugs. The drugs that are patented and come out from the pharmaceutical companies, there's often a lot more rigorous clinical study, drug interaction studies and so forth. And sometimes how we learn about herbal interactions is just through case studies or case reports. There are more studies that are being done nowadays, but you know, I think that is one concern always, is, you know, how, you know, natural and chemical drugs can interact. And sometimes they haven't been studied, and we just have to kind of look at first principles, how the drug works, how the natural product works, and then could this potentially interact positively or negatively. And in some cases, there's positive interactions where we can take a natural product to offset a side effect with a drug, or we can take a natural product to enhance the benefit of a drug. You know, that's, you know, there are many potential ways that they can be used integratively. And I always encourage people to seek advice when they are going to take natural products or even over-the-counter drugs. Talk to somebody, pharmacist, doctor, naturopath, your holistic practitioner, somebody who can give you some advice on how to use them appropriately.
That was a fantastic interlude there, describing all the really intelligent use of combining natural products with conventional medicine, which I really think is the best way to go for so many patients. And also looking at, like you talked about, sometimes only using natural first when it's appropriate, since there does seem to be a lower rate of adverse effects. And of course, that's when the patient themselves or the customer or consumer has to take control of their lifestyle and make the changes necessary to decrease the health issue that caused the need for the drug. So it's sort of like a wonderful partnership. Well, we're going to talk specifically, Sherry, about what's going on this summer with all kinds of, you know, increases in bacteria that we do see this time of year. But first, we're going to take a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and we're going to listen to The Natural Medicine Chest. And when we come back, we will be continuing our discussion with pharmacist Sherry Torkos, highly educated, writer of so many books, the Canadian Encyclopedia of Natural Medicine, Saving Women's Hearts, and many other theses and radio shows and lectures about natural medicine, and you can visit her website at sherrytorkos.com. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll talk about high blood pressure or hypertension.
Hypertension or high blood pressure is a disease of the Western world and a product of modern civilization. Cultures that continue to adhere to an indigenous lifestyle, which includes low stress levels, a non-refined whole foods diet, as well as vigorous exercise, experience virtually no episodes of essential hypertension. It is very interesting to note that when individuals from these societies emigrate to Western countries and adopt Western habits, they too fall prey to hypertension. Naturopathic treatment of hypertension has not changed essentially in the last century. The mainstay of the treatment still relies on diet, exercise, stress reduction, lifestyle modification, with secondary support from other modalities such as hypotensive phytotherapy or herbal medicine, hydrotherapy, which is the therapeutic use of water, clinical nutrition, as well as homeopathy. We'll focus on phytotherapy in this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest.
Let's talk about Taraxacum officinalis. This is an unpopular nuisance to many homeowners trying to build that perfect lawn. However, this common weed, the dandelion, is a powerful yet safe botanical medicine for the treatment of hypertension. In a Romania study in 1974, the common dandelion was found to be as potent a diuretic as a commonly used drug called Lasix. Dandelion, however, due to its rich levels of potassium, acted against potassium ion depletion, a dangerous condition known as hypokalemia, seen as a side effect of many antihypertensive drugs which promote diuresis. The leaf of the dandelion was a more effective medicine than the root, although the root is utilized by naturopathic physicians and has a powerful liver-specific medicinal quality.
Crataegus oxycantha, also known in the vernacular as hawthorn, is a common tree in the family Rosaceae, or the rose family. Extracts of the plant in the Western literature date back far beyond the Middle Ages. Even the Chinese were privy to its usage, especially as a digestive tonic. The therapeutic principles are found in extracts from the leaves, berry-like fruits, as well as the flowers. In Europe, Crataegus is well respected for its effects at lowering blood pressure, blood lipids, reducing angina attacks, and preventing and perhaps reversing atherosclerotic deposition in arterial walls. This plant has demonstrated a remarkable safety record, but because of its powerful effects, it should not be used with certain cardiac or hypotensive drugs and should be used by a qualified practitioner of alternative medicine.
Other herbs are also helpful for hypertension, such as garlic, olive, and olive oil, and ginkgo biloba.
So, if the pressures of life are making your blood boil, don't forget about these herbal medicines the next time you reach into the Natural Medicine Chest.
More right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we are so happy to have as our guest today holistic pharmacist Sherry Torkos. She's very knowledgeable and she's been speaking to us today. If you missed part of the show, you can always get this show on our archives at Progressive Radio Network, that's PRN.FM. And also for more information about attending classes, workshops, herb walks, Chinatown walks, where we go into Chinatown and visit with Chinese pharmacists who are very knowledgeable in traditional Chinese medicine as well. That's like a day in another country in and of itself. And that is by going to naturalnurse.com and go to the top and hit calendar. That's where all the classes are listed, and you can also sign up for a free newsletter by scrolling down at naturalnurse.com to the left corner and just put in your email. Nothing else is required. And there is no cost. We do send out a free newsletter. For our guest today, Sherry Torkos, I would like to reintroduce her, and she is a holistic pharmacist. She is the author of 18 books, including Saving Women's Heart, the Canadian Encyclopedia of Natural Medicine, and the Glycemic Index Made Simple. So we're never going to get to all of those topics on today's show because Sherry is deeply involved in natural medicine for so many years. But you can find out more about her at www.sherrytorkos.com. So thank you again so much for joining us today, Sherry.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Now, you are right in the Niagara Falls area.
That's right. I live about 20 minutes from Niagara Falls.
I have a student. I'll just tell you her first name, you know, is Andrea. We're not going to give out information about her, but I want you to know that she actually flew from Buffalo to attend our herb walk last week. That's not around
wonderful.
The corner. And she did that because she said that she can't find anyone really deeply teaching and educating about herbs and natural medicine in her area, and she lives in the town of Niagara Falls.
Interesting. Yeah, we do have a lot of health food stores. I would say that there are seminars that are offered from time to time in the Niagara region, but we're also fairly close to Toronto, and there are a lot of courses and programs that are offered in Toronto, but it sounds like she had a great opportunity to come and do an herb walk with you. I'm sure that would be something I would like to do myself.
Please do. Anytime we have them ongoing, this is our, that probably was our 56th one. We do 2 to 5 a year for the last 27 years.
So that's incredible.
We always have one coming up, but I am going to connect her to you as well because I think you could be a wonderful resource, and you're right in her backyard.
Absolutely.
So it's great to know. I'll send her a copy of this radio show, and anyone, by the way, can get this radio show that we're doing today anytime in the future because they are archived, and I'll send you also a link, pharmacist Sherry Torkos. So let's go into a very common topic, or current topic, I'd like to say, about bacteria. Because, you know, first of all, people hear that word bacteria. So would you say that, as a pharmacist, all bacteria are harmful?
Oh, no, definitely not. There are bacteria, which are tiny little microorganisms. They can be pathogenic, meaning they can cause disease and illness. However, bacteria also play a very beneficial role in our health. Particularly, we're talking about the microflora, the probiotic bacteria that lives in our digestive tract from top to bottom, mouth to the back end. We're lined with bacteria, and a lot of the bacteria are crucial to digestive function, to our immune function. They help with nutrient absorption, fighting off bad bacteria. But when people talk bacteria, typically they're thinking germs, they're talking bacteria that cause, say, throat infections or bladder infections, and those are the pathogenic bacteria. That there are some that actually do spike during the summer months. Bacteria that cause bladder infections in particular, that can be problematic, and I will tell you, as a pharmacist, I'm seeing, unfortunately, more and more cases of people developing resistant bacterial infections. So they're getting a bladder infection that we used to be able to treat quite easily with an antibiotic, and now the antibiotics aren't working as effectively. We're getting these resistant types of bacterial infections.
Well, let's talk a little bit about, you know, how does that happen? Because it's becoming now, I would say, people are hearing about that on the news. I mean, it's big time. And you, as a pharmacist, would understand actually the mechanism of how that is happening. What does that mean?
Yep. So what happens is, as bacteria are exposed to antibiotics. I mean, they want to survive, survival of the fittest, right? There's always an innate desire with microorganisms and humans and everybody to survive, and bacteria don't want to be killed by antibiotics. And, you know, to put it in a kind of a common sense way of understanding it, they can morph and change and adapt so that they become resistant to being destroyed by antibiotics. And the problem is that the antibiotics that we've relied on for decades to treat simple infections like strep throat, bladder infections, like drugs like penicillin, and also the sulfa drugs, we now have a case where some of the infections that people are getting, they won't respond to being treated with those antibiotics. And I've had a patient in the pharmacy about 2 weeks ago. She had a bladder infection, and she took a seven-day course of an antibiotic, and it was one of those the sulfa drugs, and she continued on with her symptoms. I encouraged her to go back to her doctor and make sure that she got the results of her laboratory culture, and it turned out that the bacteria that she had was not susceptible to the sulfa drugs, so she had to switch and take a quinolone antibiotic, a different type of antibiotic.
Doctors supposed to do, I know they don't always do it, but aren't they supposed to do specificity studies before they recommend an antibiotic? So they will be targeting the correct organism?
Well, they're supposed to, yes, but sometimes I think she went to a walk-in clinic and they just did the urine dipstick test where they just check for the presence of leukocytes, the white blood cells. And so they send away the culture, but the culture sometimes takes a couple days to get back. So a lot of times doctors, what they'll do is they'll start a person on an antibiotic, wait to get the culture back, and then they should call the patient and say either we gave you the right drug or the wrong drug, we need to get you back in here. But, yeah, the reality is that, you know, since we've had antibiotics, like since the early 1940s, antibiotics have saved a lot of lives, and they've been very effective against infectious diseases. But unfortunately today we have about, I think it's 2 million people that get antibiotic-resistant infections, and about 23,000 people die from them. And this is why, wherever possible, we need to be vigilant towards prevention. And it's not always possible to prevent infections. I mean, there are, you know, things that you get exposed to or infections that you can acquire, but with the one that does peak a lot this time of year, bladder infections, there's some things that women and men as well can do to kind of reduce their likelihood of getting these infections. Like drinking lots of water so that you're flushing any bacteria out of your bladder. For ladies, it's really important to wipe after you go to the bathroom, wipe from front to back so that you're not introducing bacteria into the urethra area, because that's what happens with a bladder infection. Bacteria gets into the urethra, that tube that carries the urine out of your body, and then the bacteria travels up into the bladder. It multiplies and reproduces and causes infection, and then you get the frequency, the urgency, the burning, and the pain. So if you void regularly, drink lots of water. Cranberry is also a very effective preventative, and this is something that you know, I take time to talk to patients about all the time, because here we have a natural product, cranberry, which is a food-based product taken in supplement form or a pure cranberry juice, which is very, very effective for preventing bladder infections. In fact, clinically studied and shown to be just as effective as antibiotics for prevention. So I think
let's
this
go
is,
into that more deeply, because isn't that fantastic? And
yeah.
Probably people have heard of that, but you might have some of the clues you'd like to share with them, or maybe you have it on your website at cherrytorcos.com, because it's not like just any cranberry. There may be special things they may want to look for in terms of what is in the cranberry, if it's a capsule, or should they use cranberry juice, and is all cranberry juice the same regardless if it's sweetened with sugar, and, you know, all kinds of deeper information about that would be so useful.
Yeah, for sure. So when it comes to cranberry, we used to think years ago that it worked by acidifying the urine, and because it's been long known that if you drink cranberry or consume cranberry, it seems to help fight off bladder infections. But then when they did the clinical studies with cranberry juice and they used the juice cocktail, some of the studies didn't yield very positive results. Some were slightly positive, some were not positive. And then it was found out that the cranberry actually works, and I believe it was Rutgers University did some of this pioneering research, and the Cranberry Institute, Dr. Amy Howell and others, where they actually discovered that the cranberry works by changing the structure of the E. coli bacteria and also some of the other bacteria like Klebsiella and others. It changes the structure of the bacteria so the bacteria can't stick to the bladder wall, which is very fascinating. It works in a natural way to repel the bacteria versus an antibiotic which destroys the bacteria, and that's why we have problems with resistance. The antibiotics actually kill the bacteria, whereas the cranberry changes the bacteria so that it can't create an infection. It can't stick to the bladder wall, and so it's eliminated from the body. And not all cranberry is the same. The gold standard for cranberry when it comes to supplement form would be an ingredient called CranMax. And CranMax, it's sold in, you can find it in health food stores and pharmacies, even in Costco, Simply Right and Schiff, and there's other brands. Natrol, I believe, has one as well. But the ingredient you want to look for on the label is CranMax, because this is the one that has been studied to the greatest extent and shown to have a meaningful effect on reducing the likelihood of getting a bladder infection. And there's been double-blind, placebo-controlled, published studies finding that it was very effective for preventing UTIs, especially in those that are at high risk. And people that are at high risk are those that get at least two or more a year. And those studies have been done in the United States. They've been done in the Czech Republic, in Australia, and other places, in Canada even. So really important to look for that ingredient. If you are consuming cranberry in a drink form, I would choose the pure cranberry juice, the pure organic cranberry juice, and then just dilute it with some water and use your own sweetener. The problem with the cranberry juice cocktail that you would buy in, say, a supermarket is that it's full of sugar. In fact, if you look at an 8-ounce serving of cranberry juice cocktail, it has about 14 teaspoons of sugar, which is just, you know, a crazy amount of sugar and not good for your immune system and definitely not going to help you out if you're trying to fight off a bladder infection.
That's such great information, Sherry. And, you know, it is interesting because that's many patients that I discuss using cranberry. I will tell them to use the regular organic unsweetened, but, you know, they make their face look like, yeah, because it is very sour. But you recommending that you add your own sweetener is, you know, such a good choice. I personally love just plain unsweetened cranberry, but I like Golden Seal, which is very bitter, not sour. So, you know, it depends on how much you're into those really natural flavors, but you certainly can sweeten it on your own. But just in deference to that, I just do want to say, which surprised me actually, is that studies have been done even in geriatric facilities where, of course, these urinary tract infections are rampant, that they did try using regular commercial and sweetened cranberry juice and still got some good effects in terms of decreasing urinary tract infections.
Oh, yeah, there have been some positive studies even with the juice cocktail, but the benefit goes up immensely once you use a more potent form. So with the cranberry juice cocktail, it contains around 20-some-odd percent of actual cranberry juice, and then the rest is sugar and water. So it stands to reason if you're going to use a more concentrated form, i.e. CranMax or the pure cranberry juice, you're going to have a stronger therapeutic effect. And certainly in long-term care facilities, nursing homes, I have a friend who's an administrator at a nursing home, and I know that this is a significant problem. Not only are women after menopause at greater risk of bladder infections, but also those that have catheters. And so for, you know, people that have a catheter due to, you know, they're bedridden or they have MS or some type of a condition where they have to be catheterized, they're at a greater risk of a bladder infection because any time there's an instrument introduced into the body, there is an opportunity for bacteria to get in. And in fact, one of the studies that was done with CranMax was done with a group of veterans was through one of the Veterans Administration hospitals, and they were a group that were at high risk because they were catheterized, and found that there were some significant benefits with CranMax reducing their incidence of bladder infections. So, I think this is a great highlights a really good opportunity where we have a natural product that can be used preventatively. And if we can prevent bladder infections, then we reduce that need for antibiotics, and then we reduce that risk of resistance and side effects and all of the problems that come with antibiotics.
Well, thank you for that discussion. We're going to take another break right here on Progressive Radio Network, and I want to remind you that you are listening to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network, and our guest today is Sherry Torkos. That's Sherrytorkos, holistic pharmacist, and we'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And thank you again for joining us right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We bring you The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z every Tuesday, 10 to 11 a.m. And then also you can listen to the archive anytime at prn.fm. And we also have radio shows posted on naturalnurse.com under radio. So there's all kinds of ways you can access these interesting informational pieces. And today we have as our guest Sherry Torkos, and she is a pharmacist, author, certified fitness instructor, and health enthusiast. What a great combination. Who also has written several books and booklets, including Saving Women's Hearts, the Canadian Encyclopedia of Natural Medicine, and the Glycemic Index Made Simple. So thank you again so much for joining us today, Sherry.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Now, you did a great job explaining to us what you would do and what kind of cranberry to look for in terms of urinary tract infections. And, you know, another big buzzword that's sort of all over the place now when you look at something like Ebola and Zika, you know, these are like things that are in the news that certainly concern pharmacists. And the word that they use is superbug. What mm-hmm. is meant by a superbug?
Yeah, so superbugs are bugs that we think of them like you say superbug. It's like it's not a superhero, but it is the opposite. It's a menace. It's a bug that has become very strong, and unfortunately so strong that it is often resistant to being killed by many of the drugs. And one of the greatest superbug infections that concern people these days are infections such as MRSA, methicillin-resistant staph aureus. That's one type of a superbug infection, and there are others as well. But we're hearing a lot more about superbugs over the past few years because, again, we have this situation where these bugs are morphing and changing and becoming very powerful and resistant to destruction by antibiotics. It's estimated that superbugs actually kill over 20,000 Americans every year, and that's according to the CDC. There are things that everybody can do to reduce their risk of getting superbug infections, and that is to keep your immune system working well, strong, getting enough sleep, eating a healthful whole foods diet, only taking antibiotics when you absolutely need them. So if you have a bacterial infection, say strep throat, or you have a well-established bladder infection, maybe you need an antibiotic. But if you go to the doctor and you have, say, a virus, don't ask for an antibiotic. only take them when you absolutely need them. And there are things that you can take to keep your immune system strong and healthy foods, such as garlic, which has a lot of benefits for immune function, and probiotic yogurt, medicinal mushrooms, supplements that are made from medicinal mushrooms as well, such as AHCC, which is something I take myself. It's that's an abbreviation for active hexose correlated compound. And basically, this is a type of medicinal mushroom that's been shown to boost your immune system and even reduce the likelihood of getting some of these superbug infections. It's fantastic because it helps to boost both your innate and your adaptive immunity. It works on activating your immune defense and fighting off superbugs. So for people that are in a situation where they have a weakened immune system, where they seem to get susceptible to a lot of infections, or they just want to take proactive steps, the AHCC is a good daily immune system supplement to consider. Because when it comes to superbugs, I think we all need to do our part to reduce this, or to kind of stop this problem from snowballing into an even bigger situation.
Now, you know, it seems like the media is carrying, like, the same hysteria with something like Ebola and something like Zika. And while they both are infectious diseases, I think there's, you know, a very large difference in the amount of hysteria that they may inspire.
Yeah, thankfully, Ebola hasn't been a big problem so far in our continent. Zika, you know, there are more and more cases of Zika. However, you know, we do tend to get very hysterical about it. To put it in perspective, there are a lot of people that will be infected with mosquitoes, with bites from mosquitoes that have the Zika virus that will never become symptomatic. And same with West Nile virus and some of these other things. So I, you know, it's important, I think, not to live your life being paranoid and fearful of going outside, and just to be smart when you are outside in areas where there are, for example, a lot of mosquitoes. You know, wear your protective clothing, put your essential oils on. If you're in a really high-risk area, you may need to consider putting some DEET on, but then wash it off when you come inside. I think when you're in areas, too, where there are a lot of ticks, you need to be mindful of the fact that tick bites can lead to Lyme disease, and so inspecting yourself, your children, when you come in from wooded areas. We have a cottage that is in an area where there are a lot of ticks, and several of our neighbors have found ticks on their bodies, and we're just really proactive. When my son comes in from playing outside, we just check him over really good to make sure there are no ticks in the back of his neck, or, you know, back shoulders, or anywhere where they can, you know, sometimes hide. You need to just do what you can and not live fearful, but be proactive. I think that's the way to go.
Well, you gave a very good advice about something that you can use ongoingly to maintain a high immune system. So if you are exposed to one of these microbes, you know, it helps to ward it off.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is something I would look at just like I would look at a multi. You take a multivitamin to make sure your body's getting all the essential nutrients it needs. For a lot of people, I recommend omega-3s and vitamin D and probiotics. And for immune support, I think this AHCC is fantastic because it works to enhance the activity of your immune system. It helps to boost the production of something called your cytokines, also your natural killer cells, your macrophages, your T cells. These are different components of your immune system that are involved in fighting off infection. And interestingly, because of the way it works, it helps ward off both viruses and bacterial infections, and it's been very well studied. The ingredient originates from Japan, and there have been over 20 human clinical studies, over 100 studies in total, but over 20 human studies. And interestingly, it's been shown to have activity against some of these superbugs that we are worried about today, like MRSA and Klebsiella. It's also been shown in preliminary research to have activity in boosting the immune response when a when a subject is exposed to West Nile virus, but that's animal studies so far. It's been in mice, but interesting to see whether that translates into benefits for humans as well. But, you know, since I found out about this supplement, it's something that I've added to my daily regimen because I think there are a lot of benefits. And even for those that have had cancer, are working on preventing recurrence, there's been some positive research in that area as well.
So it's something that might be a preventative. And, you know, we're actually getting close, believe it or not, to the end of our hour together. You were just so chock full of information. But we do have time for you to tell people sort of like another little word of wisdom that you'd like to leave them with, and also the best way to contact you in the future, Sherry Torkos, holistic pharmacist.
Yeah, so, you know, anybody that would like more information on the books that I've written, you can check out my blog, which is on my website, sherrytorkos.com, S-H-E-R-R-Y-T-O-R-K-O-S. Gosh, and if I could say, you know, my words of wisdom, you know, it seems to me in the last few weeks I've encountered some situations with friends and family that, you know, they weren't feeling well. There was something that wasn't quite right with them, and some advice that I've shared with them that I would like to share with others is that, you know, we're all responsible for our own health. I think it's important to seek advice. Talk to your doctor, your healthcare practitioner, but if something's not sitting right, if you, deep down inside, you feel something's not right, you've got to explore that.
Thank you so much, Sherry. Sorry we couldn't get that very last word of wisdom in, but until next time, natural listeners, we're hoping that you stay healthy.